listener-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 28th of May, Anno Domini 2011, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Here we go. On Thursday, Google introduced Google Wallet and Google Offers at an event in New York City. The company says it plans to bring all parts of the retail experience together to make tomorrow's best shopping experience, according to Google Vice President of Commerce, Stephanie Telenius. The services will combine coupons and discounts and payments at the time people buy things through their phone. Together, the services work like this. When you go to checkout, you just wave your phone over a terminal, which will charge your credit card. Meanwhile, your loyalty points with that merchant will be added to your phone. Eventually, receipts will be delivered to your phone. The first phone that will be able to do this is the Android-based Nexus S, which has an NFC chip inside. It can make payments via MasterCard's PayPass system. The system uses NFC, or near-field communication technology. NFC is a chip technology that, when placed in two different devices, lets small amounts of data be sent over very short distances between them. This can include data such as credit card information, train ticket info, and a coupon barcode. All future Android phones will contain NFC chips, according to Google. Google Wallet won't be out until this summer officially, but in the meantime, there will be some local trials in San Francisco and New York City before expanding to more cities. The first participating retailers will be Macy's, Subway, Walgreens, Toys R Us, Bloomingdale's, Guess, and Noah's Bagels. For payment service, Google is partnering with Sprint, MasterCard, Citi, and First Data. Google Wallet will support Citi and MasterCard in a prepaid card funded from any credit card. More card brands will be coming, according to Telenius. Google says loading a card on a phone will be more secure than a physical wallet thanks to the smartphone's password and encryption on the phone. Google also introduced Google Offers, a daily deal service that will be delivered to customers in an email or to a phone. Like the payment system, to redeem these coupons, a customer can show the cashier at a store or tap their phone to pay. Google Offers will be in trials in San Francisco and New York this summer. American Eagle is one of the first retailers that will support Google Offers. Eventually, boarding passes, tickets, and more will come to the Google Wallet. These are the first steps, Telenius stressed. This vision will take time to come to fruition. In other news, PayPal and eBay are already suing Google over the technology. So our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is does Google Wallet sound like a good idea? Your choices are, it's the future, I can't wait, and no, it feels too unsecured, and no, it just doesn't interest me. So far, we have 43 votes, 60% of you are uninterested. When you're done with that, of course, I know you'll have more to say, so check the little yellow box underneath the poll. It will take you to another website where you can enter information. The question there is, what do you think about Google Wallet? Of course, we've already got, we've already got some.
I still
got
to get that in. I'd miss.
You got it. And, of course, that's our question to you. What do you think of Google Wallet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. It is a beautiful day out there so far today.
It is gorgeous.
So I suspect many of you are not indoors anywhere.
You think?
Personally believe that.
We've already had a lot of security concerns about the RFID chips, apparently pronunciation concerns too, in credit cards, being able to walk by a thief with a reader who steals the money out of your pocket.
Yep.
Now it's even more
easy
with a cell phone.
According to Google, and this is, according to the people who want to sell you this, so take that with however many grains of salt you feel are necessary, this is more secure. Because the NFC chip, they say, is totally disconnected from the rest of the system. Now, I'm a little unsure how it works.
How can you pay for something?
Yeah, I understand it. They also say that when the screen is off, the chip is off.
So all you have to do is, as a thief, is set up outside a shopping store. So
well, it's near field, so you have right. to be within a couple inches. So you really right. have to be pretty close.
Yeah, right next to the
right.
the cash register.
Right. If you really all you need to do is get a job at a convenience store, set your reader right next to their reader,
yep.
and walk away after a day.
Yeah.
But in terms of the you know the walk by theft that can happen with credit cards in general,
yeah.
with the cards with the chip, you can't do that with this because as long as the screen is off. The chip is off. I mean, it's absolutely right. off. So, but dialing somebody, you're pretty safe.
Or you set your pirate reader next to the door, so when they swipe it at the register before the screen goes to sleep and they walk out the
yeah,
door.
Yeah, depends on you're right.
Yeah.
If you're one of those people who doesn't shut your own phone off. Yeah, maybe, but it's still fairly secure. But we'll see. It's essentially an RFID chip. It's an RFID chip, but they call it near field communication because it's a little different, but it's the same idea. But like I said, the big thing about it is that it's not always on. It's off unless you turn it on. And they're also talking about now. Of course, nobody's seen it, but the demonstration. The guy had to put in his PIN number. He had to pick his card. So you know, it's a little more secure than just here it is.
You hope.
Yeah, you hope. All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Rich from Irondequoit. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Hello, guys. Good afternoon. It's a question about getting online on a wireless network at work. I'm using Windows 7 on my laptop machine, and the service or everything else is on a Windows Server 2003. When I get onto it or see the network, it shows me two connections.
Uh-huh.
And they might work for like a second or two, and then that's it. But they're showing both at the same time, and like it's trying to connect to both of them.
How far away are you from the,
in the same room.
Wireless transmitter?
In the same room.
Are they on two different channels? Does it tell you what channel they're on?
It does, and it doesn't say. I think they're on both.
It could be the 2.4 and the 5 networks.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. You should be able to just pick one and connect to it and tell Windows to forget the other one.
Okay.
Sorry.
My eardrums.
And when you do that...
Could it be something, too, with my rights or my permissions and stuff like that with Windows Server Edition?
Well you aren't even at the server yet.
Yeah, Windows Server has nothing to do with Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
There's a Wi-Fi access point with a radio field that's creating this network.
Yeah, okay, if you're not getting through that,
right,
you're not getting on.
Yeah, you're not even at the rest of it
so
yet.
So that shouldn't even be going through that, or no other computer should have anything to do with that.
Probably.
Giving you rights or anything.
Maybe. It really depends on how it's set up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, for example, let's say it's WPA2. There are many protocols through which you can connect to... a wireless network, but one of the most secure is WPA2.
Okay, I believe it's on that one, if I'm not mistaken. I know the access code is, you know, probably
right.
16 characters.
Well, and there you are. WPA and WPA2, there's WEP. Some of them take just a code. Some of them take a username and a password. So, for example, at RIT, we use WPA2. When I connect to that, it asks for my username and password. That is the username and password I have for the entire RIT network, and it is from a Windows server. It is from a Windows server, actually. It's Microsoft Exchange server. But so it connects to that to give me that. But it sounds like you're not even getting that far.
Yeah.
So your problem
is... I know I'm not trying to get access into the network. I'm just trying to get access onto the internet service.
Right. So what
well,
I think
you have to
yeah, you still got to connect.
You still
right.
got to connect to the wireless network.
Yeah.
You still got to connect to the network and when you try, does it come up with anything? Does it ask you anything? Is there
well, it had asked me for the security code and I had put that in.
Right.
And I believe it accepted it and then like I said it might work for a few minutes and believe it or not, there have been other people that have been given the code there also who are using like Apple machines they do it and they get one, they get one, you know, place or one, they see one place to connect to, and that's it, and they sign on, and away they go.
Well, you should be seeing it, though, on your wireless, down in the lower right-hand corner. If you're connected, you should see, if you check your wireless connections, you should see, say, that particular router that you're trying to connect, or wireless connection you're making a connection to, should show you that you're connected and what your bit rate is.
I think
but he's not
does,
even getting
that.
That's what I mean. But he thinks he is.
Is showing me
wait a minute. I can't hear both of you at once.
There.
Stop, stop. I'm sorry. Yeah. I cannot hear both of you at once.
Yeah.
What I'm saying, though, initially, though, is he was saying that he's putting in the code, and he thinks he's connected. The only way he's going to be able to tell if he's connected, whether that's being accepted, is if down in the lower right-hand corner, it shows that the wireless connection that he typed into is connected. It'll okay. sit there and say that he's
right.
connected.
And also,
right.
if he gets anywhere on the network, like he can bring up Google.
Right.
But you're saying you can't do that.
It might work one time and then not work after that.
Well, that's a different problem. So you are getting connected, and you can get places on the network.
Well, just it's only allowing me internet access. It's not allowing me to go, we'll say, to another machine or get
well,
on
that's
my
a separate
account.
Well, okay, that's a very
machines.
Different. That's a very different problem. So you can. Let me get this straight.
Okay.
You do in fact get connected to the wireless router, and you can get out on the internet.
Sometimes only working intermittently.
Okay, then that problem. I mean, let's solve one at a time here.
Okay.
That problem is either because you're too far from the network access point, there's more than one access point and they're overriding each other, they're not set up properly to work together, or there's something not right with your machine,
so
with the wireless access
point. Let me just interject one thing. I should be able to somehow set up that wireless access to be only internet accessible with a code.
You shouldn't be able to.
No.
The system administrator who created that access point can do that.
Well, okay. I'm kind of working with him doing this kind of stuff. So I guess when I say me, I'm talking systems administrator
okay.
also.
Okay, yes. Then yes, anybody who has access to the router itself in terms of being able to set it up should be able to say this router can only take you to the internet, it can connect you to anywhere on our inner network or just the outer network or whatever.
Okay. And now there could be a possibility of a thing where it could be on the inside of a firewall that we have also,
sure.
A hardware firewall, so maybe that could be causing a problem?
Yes and no. Again,
okay.
Like Dave said, if you can tell, there's three separate connections we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maybe four. One is, are you connecting to the network access point? And that's that little icon down in the lower right.
Okay.
And that will tell you if you're connected to that. Then there's the connection to the firewall. And if you should be able to talk to your systems administrator who can tell you what the IP address is. Can you ping it?
Okay.
If you can ping that, then you've reached the firewall.
Okay.
Now try to ping something like Google.
Okay.
Or start at the DNS, maybe.
Start at the DNS. Yeah.
Now,
start at anybody's DNS.
He had mentioned, this may be another key piece here, too. He had mentioned something about the DNS or something like that with our logins and things like that, why it's not working with the Windows 7 machine.
No, actually, well, I don't know what he said, but
right.
The reality is that in general, if you've set up Windows 7 networking correctly, it should work great.
So we shouldn't have that problem of seeing two networks and things like that and everything
else. I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
Here's the thing. You're saying
there's
Apple
only
people,
one network there.
Well, many wireless routers, especially if they're the newer models that support the N wireless,
okay.
They can run on 2.4 gigahertz or 5 gigahertz. And some of the routers can run on both at the same time.
Okay.
The Apple Airport router creates two separate networks, so you can have a guest network, and many of the third party networks do.
That may be an answer too, right there to connect. Try connecting just with a guest network type thing for everybody that wants, you know, internet access to their laptop.
Yeah. So that single wireless router may be putting out two networks.
But your system administrator should know that. And should be able to give each of them different names. For example, I at home have a router that does both 2.5 and 5 gigahertz connectivity, and they each have different names, and in fact, they have different wireless connectivity protocols. So if friends come over, they can get on one fairly easily. They still, I still have to give them a password.
Sure.
But they can get on fairly easily, but all they can get to is the internet. On the other one, it gets you to my home network.
Ah, okay.
Right? And it's a much higher encryption, and it's a much better password, in fact. So it may well be that that's part of your problem. There, it may well be putting out two networks, and the Macs that your other employees have may be old enough that they only see one because they don't have both radios in their Macs.
Okay. All right.
And so if you've got a much newer machine, which if you just bought a Windows 7 machine, it is, it might have both radios in it, so you're seeing both networks. Now you have to talk to your system administrator,
okay,
who should know the answers to all these questions, and he or she should be able to tell you exactly how to connect. And in fact, you may have to go into you or your SA may need to go into your Windows 7 networking stuff,
okay,
and forget both networks, and then reboot and let it discover them again.
Okay.
And that way you're going in clean, and you can set up to connect to whichever one you like, whichever one is a little stronger.
Right, or if you want to disable one of them and have just the one.
Whatever, whatever.
Right.
But that's the way it would have to be.
Okay. All right.
All right.
I think you guys have answered my question, or at least given me some things to look into to try to, you know, connect it and
that's
stuff
our,
like that.
That's our point.
And the problem with connecting to two of them or two of them being there.
Right. All right, we got to go, Rich. Thanks.
Okay, guys, thanks.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Skype users affected by a recent glitch can now get back online by downloading the latest software update. Windows and Mac users should be sure to quit completely out of Skype before installing the update. Keep in mind that an open version of Skype can sometimes hide in the Windows taskbar and may launch automatically on startup depending on the program settings. And you Mac users should be well aware by now that simply closing a window doesn't actually close a program. Linux users can fix the problem manually by navigating to Home, whatever your username is, and .skype with a capital S, and then delete a file named shared.xml, then restart Skype. Of course, be out of Skype before you do that. The problem surfaced early Thursday, but unlike December's massive Skype outage, which affected all users for more than 24 hours, the latest issue was a minor one. Skype said the problem stemmed from a corruption that occurred in a small percentage of user systems, resulting in some of our community not being able to sign into Skype. What an incredible coincidence that many people had exactly the same corruption at exactly the same time. Either way, outages and errors are nettlesome as Skype tries to play a bigger role in online communications. Earlier this month, Microsoft announced plans to acquire the voice and video chat server for $8.5 billion with a B, United States dollars. Microsoft wants to integrate Skype into many consumer and business products, including Kinect and Outlook, which, while continuing to offer the service on other platforms. My favorite tweet, I read a tweet about this problem. It said, Skype crash is global. Now you know it's a Microsoft product. So our question to you, were you affected by the Skype crash? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
There's truth into that.
One of the big issues we see with Skype and some other programs on the Mac is when you download the program, you get an installer disk, which then you're supposed to install the program from. Too many novice users run it from the installer disk, which then prevents auto-updating. It prevents security patches, so you have to remember to install it after you download it.
On a Mac?
Yeah.
Every time I download something for a Mac, I get this little window that says, drag this to here.
Well, you know that means drag that to there.
Well, and that's I was about to point that out. That is incredibly unhelpful.
On the Skype website,
don't actually know.
It tells you what to do. People ignore that.
I understand that, but yeah. It really is very unhelpful. And why do I have to drag that to there? That very much strikes me as the sort of thing that Betty Crocker did in the 40s by saying, oh, just break an egg in it, now you feel like you're cooking.
It's supposed to be easier than running an installer program and answering all the questions about do you want to install it and where do you want to install it and all that mess.
Why don't they just install it?
Yeah,
just if all you're going to do is drag this to there, don't they just install it?
Then you'll complain about the security problems of installing software.
You downloaded it on purpose.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and no, that was the whole thing from a couple of weeks ago, the Mac Defender virus. You download it on purpose, but it's a fake program, and then it installs itself, and you give it your password. In fact, there's a fourth variant that doesn't need your password.
Right.
Because if you're already logged in as an administrator, it copies something into the applications folder.
Right.
It doesn't actually install it, and so it bypasses the password.
Right.
But it's been an issue with a lot of Mac users because there's so many different ways to install. You can drag install, you can run an installer, and people see the big Skype logo. Firefox is the other one where this is like that.
So I could double-click on that and actually run the program.
Right, but it's running from a locked image, so it can't set preferences properly. It can't auto-update itself. So it people end up with old versions.
But notice how more and more stuff is coming out to attack the Mac.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it's gained 10% of the market share, which was the threshold.
The smugness.
And it's over 10%, it's like 12% now. So it's gone over the threshold, and my favorite are the Mac people who still believe nothing can attack them, and they're safe, and yada, yada, yada. And they're just as vulnerable as everybody else to all of the phishing attempts and all of the human engineering stuff. That goes on, and they just don't. And in fact, more so, because at least some Windows people are a little bit leery of that stuff. But too many Mac people are not yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Microsoft.
They will be.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's going to bite them in the butt yet.
Microsoft did a big in-depth analysis of the Mac Defender Trojan and linked it to a previous Windows. Exploit a similar attack where it's claims to be an antivirus program, and they think they traced it back to a Russian hacker club. And if you read the messages that come up, it's in fairly awkward English grammar, so it's obviously not a native English speaker. But it was interesting that Microsoft did this detailed analysis.
You're right. Well, that's proving that somebody else has a problem, too. They're probably all dancing in the streets.
Yeah.
We're not the only ones.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, where most of the stuff comes from anyways, is third world countries, is the spyware, malware, and all that, because the U.S. can't do squat as far as prosecuting them.
We've talked about that in the past with the collapse of the Soviet Union. We've got all these Russian spooks that are out of a job.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to sit there, because folks say, well, what do they get out of it? And here's what I try to explain to folks. You know, if I can create a program that turns around and just gets into your machine and say, just grabs your email list. Mm-hmm. So I grab, say, 50 from this person, 75 from that, and the program just goes around and collects emails. Now I turn around and I've compiled, say, a couple million email addresses. I can turn around and sell those to spammers for a nice little profit.
I get them all the time. I get emails all the time offering to sell me lists of chiropractors or lists of dentists or, you know, lists of whatever. I'm sure they don't have a clue whether they're dentists or chiropractors or whatever, but that's not the point. They're selling me a list. And so, you know, if all they need, honestly, all they need is one person to buy the list, and they've made money. One person.
You talk about regular postal, you know, junk mail, you know, postal direct marketing. They talk that 1% is a good response.
Mm-hmm.
With junk email, one response. Not 1%, one.
But I mean, they literally just create this program that they just sit back and, you know, collect them in.
It used to be just bragging rights that you'd put a sign up on somebody's computer. Oh, ha, ha, ha. Now they're stealing your money.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now they don't want you to know they were in there because they're stealing stuff.
Yeah.
In fact, most of the problems caused by viruses are because they aren't very good programmers.
That's exactly right. One of the things that they'll try to do is they'll look for strings of numbers, which could be Social Security numbers or bank numbers, and those are the files
credit
they'll steal.
Credit card numbers.
Right, credit card numbers. Those are the files they'll steal. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Peter from Penfield. Welcome, Peter. What's your problem?
Hi, guys. Love listening to the program, by the way. And it's fun to listen to even outside of computing, you know. It's just you guys have a good time.
Thanks.
I'll tell you what. I've got iTunes question for you, an iTunes question. When I play a song from the folder and the song finishes, it seems to autoplay into kind of the history of songs that are in the music column. And I can't figure out how to stop it from autoplaying other than maybe creating a playlist, which I wouldn't want to do for if I just want to play, say, one song.
That's the point of iTunes, is to play all the songs in the current playlist.
Wow. So what kind of alternative is it? Plus the fact, I mean, does iTunes phone home a lot and just send information a lot and all that to Apple?
iTunes itself doesn't do anything like that, but one of the features in iTunes, two of the features, one is Genius and one is Ping. They will ask the Apple, I forget what they called it, the Genius playlists looks at your music, compares that with music on Apple's Genius servers, and finds other music you may be interested in.
Oh.
And you can turn that feature off. Same way with Ping. Ping shares the music you're playing to the Ping network so that you can find other people's music. And that's all easy to turn off.
Yeah.
If you're interested in just playing one song, the easiest thing to do is search for it in the search bar so that it's the only song listed. You don't have to make an entire playlist of that one song, but just search for that one song. It's the only one in the list.
In the search bar, is that in a drop-down menu? I mean, the search bar, that's in the application window?
Yeah, right in the window. There's a little magnifying glass
that
lets you search.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give that a try.
Sure.
Another thing I was going to mention, I heard you guys talking a little bit about kind of security stuff and information and all that. I just got a shipment from Amazon, and I noticed below the barcode is my phone number printed out, which, you know, I mean, whatever. If I was in some big city and it was lying around my apartment building and all that, I guess they wouldn't leave it outside the door, but I just think that's pretty sloppy of them to print something like my phone number right there on the label.
Wow, I completely agree. Mm-hmm.
All shipping companies require you to put a phone number on your shipment notices so that if there's a problem delivering it, they can call somebody.
What the heck? I mean, that could be in UPS has got their little handheld PDA guy. If they got a problem, they could scan a barcode and it could pop up there rather than have it visible to everybody that's just going to see
completely
that label.
Agree.
I mean, it's one
completely
less.
Completely agree.
So, okay. Well, hey, I'll try the search bar.
Thanks, Peter.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys.
I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
That's, That's
especially if it's being out on sitting out on the porch.
You know, it's not just end users who've stopped thinking about security. Apparently, everybody has stopped thinking about security. Now, you might say, Amazon doesn't care because your phone number is public. Not everybody's phone number is public.
Mm-mm.
And I may not want, and just because it's, even if it's public, I may not want it that easily discovered by anybody. If you don't know my last name, finding me in the phone book is very, very difficult. So I don't want you finding my phone
number. Well, especially since I don't have a home.
Yeah, oddly, I keep thinking I got to take. If only Google had 900 numbers.
Oh, I'd
get 900 SNIC.
I'd be really ticked off because I don't have a home phone number. I use my cell phone.
And right.
If they'd put that on there and had that out there, then I'd really be porked off. That you know that's being sitting out there that anybody could sit there and then dial that.
Now there's where you get a Google Voice number.
Mm-hmm.
And you put into it your local UPS, FedEx, whatever numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, that's all you use for. So if a phone number, if a call comes in.
Then I know who.
Well, in fact, if a call comes in, they have to announce who they are.
That'd be perfect.
And so you listen, and it says, you know, FedEx. Okay, I'll pick up the phone. Joe Smith. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Blow him off.
Yeah,
it's an idea.
Yep.
Otherwise,
Google Voice has an amazing number of really good capabilities.
Because otherwise, I just use a shop phone. You know, which,
right.
And I'm still amazed by the number of folks that sit there. They are getting so creative lately, and I don't know if you're getting this, Steve. On, of course, I got Samantha. God love Samantha. You know, you either tell her what you want or you're not getting by her to get to me or Dan. And some of these guys are getting really like, oh, I know, you know, Dave from the show and blah, blah, blah. And they've snuck by her. And she'll sit there and go, damn. Because I go, and they go into the sales pitch, and I sit there and say, oh, no, thank you. She goes, another one? She gets all frustrated because she takes such great pride.
We get that a lot with people asking for discounts. Oh, yeah, I go to school with you know, the owner's kids. And
I'm an old friend of Jesse's.
Yeah.
How old? We've known each other for 35 years.
Yep.
Really?
Well, and then that's
oops.
That's one of the tricks we do have is when someone asks for Jesse, you know, our company name is Jesse Group, but you know, Jesse doesn't work there.
Right.
So we know if they don't know who we are.
For years I had a DBA, and let's pretend the name was John Smith Enterprises, right?
I know John Smith.
Yeah, well, people would call me up and say, I'd like to talk to Mr. Smith, please. May I ask who's calling? Yeah, it's Joe... whatever, I'm an old friend of his. Really? Okay, hold on. And I'd put him on hold, and I'd come back, and I'd go, yeah, Mr. Smith doesn't know you. No, we're all friends. He says he doesn't know you. Well, could you tell him that I called? Yeah, sure, give me a number. I'll call back. No, you won't.
I'd sit there and say, turn around and say, yeah, he'd like that money that you owe him.
Yeah, right.
As soon as you pay him that check, he said that he'd be willing to talk to you.
You know, yeah.
See what they do with that.
Yeah, right.
Just a little extra twist on it, you know.
Yeah, right, all right. That's very funny. That's very funny.
Sometimes we give him fake names. Oh, yeah, you need to talk to Phil. Is he in? No, he's not in. Do you know when he's going to be in? No, maybe next week sometime.
Phil's on vacation.
Phil's on vacation, yeah.
You need to talk to Phil. When's he going to be in? He died. Well, who else can I talk to? Nobody.
Nobody. We haven't reassigned
that We haven't filled Phil's position yet. You want to apply for the job?
That's very bad. That's very cruel. That's actually very cruel.
But good.
Actually pretty terrible.
I almost feel a little sorry for them because they're probably some, you know, they're working for some solicitation company trying to make a buck for their family.
Well, and for a very short time just after college, my sister-in-law did that. So we do try to be polite to them up to a point.
Yeah.
But when they call me at Saturday morning, you know, at 9 a.m., I'm sorry, I'm not going to be polite. And when they call me right at dinner time,
yep.
I'm not going to be polite.
We've been getting calls 3 or 4 times a day, and the call ID says local news. But the telephone number is from Minneapolis. And so I Google around, and it's a Minneapolis newspaper wanting to sell you a subscription to their newspaper. And apparently they're calling nationwide.
Nice.
And it shows up on your call ID as local news. Oh, the local news wants to talk to me.
What could possibly happen in Minneapolis that I would need to read about day?
That you couldn't Google.
That I couldn't Google. Well, and that's the big thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's a real problem in terms of everything. For every medium. How do you beat the internet? How do you keep people down on the farm after they've seen Perry? And I don't know. So here's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Where do you get your news? Do you do it from Google? Do you actually watch the news? How much more or less are you watching these days? Get it on a phone? Do you use news readers? Do you just wander around the internet? How do you do it? Give us a call. Let us know. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Plenty of time for you to dial the phone, no matter how slow you are. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Travel around the world. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, our Soundbites. Microsoft downplayed the threat posed by an unpatched vulnerability in all versions of Internet Explorer. All versions of Internet Explorer that an Italian researcher has shown can be exploited to hijack people's online identities. The bug, which has only been discovered and has only been discussed and not disclosed in detail, was part of an attack technique described by Rosario Velada, who dubbed the tactic cookie jacking, but probably in Italian, a play on clickjacking exploit method first revealed in 2008. Velada combined an unpatched bug or zero-day in IE with a twist on the well-known clickjacking tactic to demonstrate how attackers can steal any cookie from any site from users duped into dragging and dropping an object on a malicious web page. He had demonstrated the attack at a pair of security conferences at Amsterdam and Zurich earlier this month, then published more information on his blog Monday. By hijacking site cookies from IE7, IE8, even IE9, all the way back to IE1 probably, attackers would be able to access victims' webmail, Facebook, and Twitter accounts or impersonate them on critical sites that encrypt traffic like, oh, say, banks, retail outlets. Jeremiah Grossman, founder and CTO of White Hat Security, called Velada's attack clever and said he could see hijackers taking it to it as a fallback to clickjacking, which he and Robert Hansen uncovered and publicized nearly 2 years ago. In the event they can't find a cross-site scripting or clickjacking vulnerability, this would be a nice fallback plan for attackers, Grossman said. But Microsoft didn't think cookiejacking was much to worry about.
Given the level of required user interaction, this issue is not one we consider high risk in the way a remote code execution could possibly be to users, said Jerry Bryant, group manager with the Microsoft Security Response Center. In order to possibly be impacted,
an incorrect use of the noun impact,
a user must visit a malicious website and be convinced to click and drag items around the page in order for attackers to target a specific cookie from a website that the user was previously logged into.
Grossman strongly disagreed. I think they're wrong, he said. Like many esoteric attack techniques, until they've seen it used in the wild, they'll downplay it. It's actually a very simple attack, but it's not technically difficult, so their take is nothing new to see here. Velada's proof-of-concept attack was to build a Facebook game that baited users with a simple puzzle of an attractive, and with it was able to collect dozens of cookies from unsuspecting Facebook users. So our question to you, still happy with Internet Explorer? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or of course toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Those numbers again, 585-966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. So call us and talk to us. Yeah, I gave up Internet Explorer a long time ago. Last night in Second Life, we do Second Life. Sound bites in Second Life. We used to do it on Fridays, I believe, starting this week. We're going to Sundays.
Tomorrow night.
Except nobody knew that because there was no actual announcement. So I.
Excuse me. Yes, I did.
Well, nobody knew it. There were probably 50 people in there last night. So luckily I was there. And it's not a big deal. But we talked about this stuff.
That gets right along with, you know, when they're clicking on information, they just click and. There was a notice sent out, and they just clicked on it and closed it because I put out there right across the top, new.
Well, oh, excellent.
Too many news, that's why.
That's what, too many news. It's just new. But then we talked about that and about how Chrome, personally I prefer Chrome to Firefox, but both are good. I've been having a great time with Chrome, by the way. I love of course, I'm using the dev version, but I think it's in the regular version now as well. The app, the web store, they call it a web store. And the amazing numbers of fascinating programs that are in there, IRC chats and name it, everything is there. Very, very interesting stuff. New Squares is fun. SpringPad is in there, a bunch of others. I really like it. So I've been using it a lot at work. A lot at home, not so much on this thing because I don't really use it for that sort of stuff, but I've got a few things on there, News Square and SpringPad.
a curling game claims to be popular.
With both of the people in Canada who still follow curling. It's
40,000 people have downloaded it.
Just to see what the hell curling actually is. Oh, it's throwing stones on ice. Okay, we're done now.
Amazon opened their Mac download store this week too.
Yes,
and they call it a Mac download store because Apple's currently suing them over App Store.
That's silly. I'm sorry, but I don't. That's just simply silly.
Yeah,
it's
silly, and you know it's silly.
One thing I heard last week before Someone had come in to the store, and they were looking at computers, and forget one of the salespeople waiting on her said, you know, and you can install this app on it. You can put apps on computers now, too?
Yeah. Now I'm even more confused.
They didn't. This person didn't know that you could run an app on a computer because they thought app was just for the Apple iPhone. Didn't realize that app was short.
Well, for iPhones, I can install apps on everything.
Right. Didn't realize that app is short for application, and we've been running applications on computers for 40 years.
Well, and that's why to me it's silly.
Yeah.
App Store. Well, are you kidding?
It's already been so tied to Apple that they don't want to lose that marketing link.
Whatever.
It's like a reverse Kleenex lawsuit.
I understand that.
Too many people are using Kleenex generically, but we want to sue them because it's our trade name.
Right.
So now they're doing it a preemptive.
Yeah, I suppose.
Loss of trademark.
I did put Angry Birds on my Chrome.
Yeah, I've got it on mine.
On Chrome, and I actually played it. It's fast. I played it at work where I don't have to scroll because I've got a really big monitor. It's great.
Nice.
Yeah, Archandra we have an IRC chat that goes on every Saturday as well. It's at Octothorpe Soundbites, or as you probably think of it, Pound Soundbites. Archandra app, is that short for application or Apple? So that's a good question.
Yeah, so that's what people have talked about. You know, and it doesn't mean application. It means Apple Store.
Yeah, but you know what? Nobody has ever thought of that.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody. When you say, oh, I went to the App Store, you don't think Apple. You think a small program you can run on whatever device you happen to have.
Yep.
Nobody thinks that, except apparently you and Archandra.
Yeah.
This would be it. All right, our next caller is Gil from Webster. Welcome, Gil. What do you think of when I say app?
Well, so I guess I'm what you might call an old timer. So there weren't no apps back in them their days. So
yep.
you know, we had projects and we had all kinds of things. But
programs. Run that program uphill both ways in the snow.
Yeah, to me that was the difference between program and application. Program is the thing you wrote, and application is what you ran when it was done.
Right. I mean, and the word application gradually sort of, I guess in the 70s, started to appear. And then, you know, from there on in, application was an application. But I think of it more of, something I would actually be running on a PC.
Yeah, there's enough prior art on the term app that
there is,
I don't think anybody should be able to.
But I guess the change for me came with the fact that when application turned into app, you know, that was sort of that's sort of like when food turned into fast food or something like that. You know, there was a demarcation of, a change in the English language that defined a new entity, and I suspect that's where the confusion, you know, may stem from. You know, an app is something that's probably associated with, you know, as you say, phones and mobile devices and who knows what.
No, I can't disagree with that at all.
But what I'm calling about is something in that very vein.
Oh, something you wanted to talk about?
No, absolutely not. But I just wanted to allude to it in the case that somebody might drift in that direction.
Sure.
We'll see how it goes.
All right.
Well, go ahead.
Okay, well, this is sort of drifting in Steve's direction. So I am a proud owner of an iPad 2,
nice.
Courtesy of Steve, actually. And I love the thing, by the way. I mean, the more you use it, the more you love it. But then again, I already love Linux, and I don't own a Droid. So now that I've covered all the political angles, I guess, I can ask my, launch my alluded question here, which is, I would love to be able to remote desktop I have a PC and a Linux machine that I run 24/7. And I would love to be able to get to both of them from my iPad. And I haven't really blasted into the internet to see what's available. But you know, I know it's always wise to ask the masters first.
Well, there is an app for that, as a matter of fact.
There are several.
There are many I've heard, but the question is, what's good, what works,
name?
And
I think...
by the way, the constraint I would prefer is not to. I'm a little bit nervous about being. involved in some kind of a service. I'd like to just have a
I agree with you.
Yeah.
App.
There's several ways to do this. And the things you're searching for are either SSH, which will get you to the command line on your machine.
Which a lot of people like to getting to.
Right. Or you can run RDP, which is Remote Desktop Protocol. That requires a little bit of setup under Linux, but it is certainly very doable. And then once you've done that, you can run whatever you want to run. You can also, from SSH, if you've set up your graphical interface correctly on your Linux box, you can run SSH with the dash capital X command, and you can also add a C to that to compress it, and that will let you actually run programs that are on your Linux box on your iPad. So, for example, I can say SSH and minus capital X C, lowercase c, and then all the extra parameters I need to log into my box and end it with the command, for example, OO Writer. All of a sudden, up on my iPad will pop OpenOffice Writer.
Yep.
And I can run that. But there are a bunch that'll do it. VNC is another way to do it.
I use a free Mocha VNC Lite. They also have a free version of RDP that connects to the Microsoft Remote Desktop Protocol. VNC is built into later Macs and can be added to Windows as well. And that basically lets you control that machine graphically as if you were sitting in front of typing and mousing on the iPad or iPhone.
Yeah, that would be I've noticed VNC, and that sort of was the one I picked out as being a good shot.
Yeah, but I haven't found a free SSH yet, or I'd be using it.
So to set up SSH on a Linux machine, do you have any one pearl to toss into the air that might explode and help me when I get there? Nick?
Well, in terms of which?
SSH should already be running. It's a core feature in
SSH
Unix.
Should be running. What version of Linux are you running?
Well, actually, there's a problem because my version is no longer being supported. Let's see, which one am I?
Well, I meant which distro?
Ubuntu.
All right, Ubuntu since 2. And if you're that far back, you've kind of got a problem. But all of them have SSH. So you should be able to do, for example, go into a terminal session. Well, you don't even have to do that anymore. Because if it's new enough, you've got the Ubuntu Software Center. But if you don't have that, you can go into a terminal typed apt-get-search SSH.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, that'll be
helpful. Excuse me, apt-cache search SSH. And things you'll actually see is SSH itself. You'll be able to install that. You'll be able to install whatever you need for that. There's a VNC Pro. There's all kinds of stuff. And you'll be able to install that. And once you've got SSH installed on your machine, you might want to pipe that through sort, but one way or the other, you can do that. And once you've got all your SSH installed, then you'll be able to go to it without a real problem. It's just SSH. You could do sudo aptitude install SSH, actually, and have it. And that installs the client and the server, and then there's docs in there and man SSH and whatever. It'll tell you how to get to from another machine. It's SSH space your username at whatever, and you can then log in, and that's at the command line. And then like I said, SSH minus capital X lowercase c, and then the command line, and end it with a program name, and it'll actually run that program on your machine.
I'm sure I can muddle through it. I don't run a great deal on my Linux machine. My Linux machine I leave out there as the burly machine exposed to the internet and come and get it, guys. And if you find anything, boy, you found something that I didn't really put there. So
Yeah, right.
I keep my Windows machine as though it were in a closet, and I don't have anything on it.
Well, that's the right thing to do. More importantly, though, even on that Linux box, you should be running RK Hunter, which searches for rootkits.
Okay.
You should be running search. I'll give you that when we come back. I can't remember the other one. But those should be running all the time.
Okay. I'll make sure that I do. Should I hang on the line? Or
no, I'll just mention them when
we
come back.
I'll listen to it on the air. Thank you, guys, as usual. Keep the great job up.
Thanks.
Take care.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, but we will be back on the... You've an entire hour of your life listening to Soundbites, but we have another hour for you to waste, which we'll do as soon as we come back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and we are Soundbites, right here on the great and grateful member-supported Jazz 90.1. So stay tuned. We'll be back with a whole lot more Soundbites after this break, whatever they're called.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, I did promise Gil I would tell him the name of those applications.
Yep.
I personally always run RK Hunter, Check Rootkit, which is CHK Rootkit, and LogWatch. I put them all in my cron tab, and they email me every morning with the results of those checks. And very nice products. They keep my machine running
pretty reliable,
clean and smooth. Yeah, by running all of them, I know immediately if there's a problem anywhere. There hasn't been lately, knock on wood, but we'll see. Bless you, my son. Hours. We actually already talked about this a little bit. Hours after Apple owned up to a fake security software scam campaign, the Scareware gang released a new variant with a new name and a streamlined installation process that doesn't prompt victims for their password. Given the timing and the new name, it does seem like this was their reaction to Apple's support document. On Tuesday, Apple acknowledged the threat posed by what security experts call Scareware or Rogueware, bogus security software that claims a computer is heavily infected with worms, viruses, and other malware. Once installed, such software nags users with pervasive pop-ups and fake alerts until they fork over a fee to purchase the worthless program. Apple also said it would update Mac OS X, adding the ability of the operating system to detect and delete the Mac Defender Scareware. The group responsible for Mac Defender and other earlier variants named Mac Protector and Mac Security must have read the news, you think? They changed the name to Mac Guard and released it immediately, probably just to give Apple the finger. The cyber criminals also changed the way they distribute the fake security program, breaking it into two parts. A small downloader, dubbed AV Runner, which once on a Mac reaches out to a hacker-controlled site to download the phony Mac Guard security software. Interestingly, of course, that's not the only thing it could download, which is what makes it really dangerous. The new version also included a more important twist. Unlike the previous variants, no administrator password is required to install the downloader. People will still see an installer screen. The attackers haven't gotten to the point where they're completely avoiding that yet. But all one needs to do is to click OK a couple of times, which we see Windows people do all the time. So it's one less hurdle. AV Runner sidesteps the need for administrator password by putting itself directly in the applications folder of a victimized Mac. Unlike a legitimate installer package, or an illegitimate one for that matter, putting an executable in the applications folder doesn't require a password when the user is the administrator. The AV Runner safely added to the applications folder, it then grabs Mac Guard from a remote server. So are you still feeling smug about your Mac? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Victor did from Irondequoit. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Nick, on your AskNick.com, there hasn't been a newsletter for about a year or so. Is there any reason why?
Yes, there's been several reasons. Some of them, it started out with me finishing off my master's degree, and then it got to some technical stuff that I'd rather not get into, but it's clearing up now, and in fact, I'm working on a brand new ASNIC that should come back stronger, bigger, and better than ever, but I've got a few more technical details to work out. But once okay. once I do, it will be back, and I'm so sorry to all of the ASNIC users, and I really appreciate their patience, and once I'm back, I'll be giving people more time and everything else, so hopefully you won't have lost anything in the transition. The tough part is transitioning from the old to the new and locking down the new the way I want it to be, so that there are no more technical issues. But my hope is to be working on that, having it working by the end of the summer at the very latest. There are a bunch of things I still need to do, but I'm working on it.
Okay, thanks.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it. That's it'll be up and when it's up and running.
Life intrudes.
Stuff happens.
And other stuff that's happening that I should mention, and just as a sidebar here, right now, even though we're coming into summer, right, Jazz 9.1 is looking for different musicians out there that are looking to have themselves on the station. And what I mean by that is now, from October to May of next year, that's October of 2011 to May of 2012, Jazz 90.1 invites various artists and bands to come in and play live here at Jazz 90.1. And all you have to do is go to jazz901.org, scroll down to where it says Musician Sought for 2011-2012 Concert Series, and there is a click here button. Fill that out, and who knows, you might be getting a phone call to ask you to come on down and see, you know, we might be talking about your band or musician, you know, it doesn't have to be a full band either, it could be, you know, just whatever, to appear live here at Jazz 90.1 as you hear us throughout the, you know, the whole fall season. We're saying, all right, this band is going to be here live, and we tell throughout our whole drive, you know, that we have live concerts, and this is your chance to be part of it. So if you would, go to jazz901.org, scroll down to where it says the concert series, click here and fill it out, and hey, good luck.
And you might also notice when you scroll down on the Jazz 901 website, a program spotlight on this new guy called Dave Enright.
Thank you. Yeah, they finally.
If you go look at Soundbite's Facebook page, you'll see Dave's there as well.
Yeah, they finally gave me Thursday nights, and I, you know, for some observable reason, let me turn me loose, and I'm having fun. You know, I'm doing Thursday nights from 6 to 9. And I invite all my, you know, listeners that do listen on Thursday nights to either text me or call me or whatever and help me discover some other artists. Because like I've told you before, I've been doing radio now for 21 years with these two other guys, and that's been computers. It's just been the past 2 years that I can blame Rotten and Orland for getting me hooked on the Jazz Fest and getting me into jazz that I wound up loving it and discovering different artists and everything else that he's now turned me loose into the library. And it's like, whoa. It's like a kid in a candy store. I've been able to have a lot of fun discovering different artists and creating a great time that, you know, a lot of folks say, well, could you play this? Could you play this? It's a lot of fun because, again, you folks have to remember, this is member-supported Jazz 90.1. So it's your station. You know, it's your dollars that bring us here. So that's why I love to have you folks put the input on what I like to play on my show. And I open it up for you folks to email me during the week, dave@jazz901.org, and I'll take your request. I'd love to hear from you folks and see what happens. But, yeah, I am having a lot of fun with it.
And I was listening the other night as I was on my way home from wherever I was. I liked almost everything you played, but that's the way it works.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing. You know, I get a lot of folks that will sit there and say, well, could you play this? Can you play this?
Right.
And that's what I do. You know, again, some of it I might not care for, but you know what? Hey, it's not about me. It's about you, the listeners, and what you want to hear. So that's what I do it. So, yeah. Well, thank you, though, sir.
No, it was very good. It was very good music. I liked that. Like I said, nobody likes it. If I liked everything you played, I'd have been the DJ because I'd have been playing it, right?
Yeah.
So if you like most of what you played, that's all that counts.
No, that's a compliment right there.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Exactly. I really did enjoy it. We've been talking a lot about in Second Life. We were talking a lot about the Chromebooks There are Google not only has the Chrome OS, but it also has the Chrome, and not only has the Chrome browser, but it also has the Chrome OS. It's their very own operating system, which they're putting in a series of notebooks. There are two right now, one from Samsung and one from Acer. They're about $400 a piece, and 8 hours, 6 hours on the Acer, I think, and eight on the Samsung, or maybe it's the other way around. Probably the other way around. I think the Samsung has a better screen, but they're both very, very good, and a lot you can do with them. And that's the kind of thing we were just talking about with a couple of folks, like Gil. If you want to do remote desktop and things like that, there are web apps available for Chrome that do all of that stuff. So you really, for the average person, you can do pretty much everything you want to do on a Chrome notebook. And the really nice thing about it is there's nothing saved on that notebook. So if you were to lose it or have it confiscated at an airport or whatever, you would find that you've lost nothing. Because unless you've got a really, really cheesy password, they're not going to be able to guess it and get into your accounts. Nothing gets stored on that machine. It's got it. Most of them have some solid state storage for preferences for certain things, but they don't store usernames and passwords. They've passed government
cloud
stuff.
Computing.
If you break into them, there's nothing you can get. If you try to intercept what's in them, one of the things it always does is check itself when you turn it on, and if there's something wrong, it just simply won't boot. So it's a pretty cool thing, and it'll do a lot of what you wanted to do. I was thinking of buying one for here, except that it has no wired connectivity.
Oh?
It's only wireless. Which isn't that big a deal for 99.9% of the people, but here in this studio...
What about getting a USB to...
I haven't played with it yet, so I don't know where you would find the driver. I don't know how you install a driver. Right?
Then you get into it. Yeah.
Right. So I don't know about that part. But for I intend to buy a couple for work because one of the nice things we're looking to virtualize everything, and if we do that, there's actually a Citrix app for Chrome that lets you run, for example, we were just talking about how with SSH you can run Linux stuff full screen or in a window. And it actually runs back at your Linux box, and you only see the screen. Same thing is true of Citrix. I guess they call them Citrix apps, and you can appify anything, including, for example, Word or PowerPoint or whatever.
Okay,
and it'll run right on that screen as if it were an app running on that machine. So it's pretty neat. Yes, you do need to have connectivity. You can't run it without connectivity. But that's why they also offer models with cell phone attachments, so you can do it that way.
That's one thing, though, I've really started to like about – I've got one of those triple E netbooks, and it doesn't have a ton of storage on it. But, with the cloud computing, it's a non-issue because I can put things up on the cloud, and as long as I can get to the internet, I can get to whatever I want, to continue to work on or, change or do, or a lot of programs and other information that I need, I store up there. It's safe, and I can get to it wherever I am, and that's – I love that.
I store almost everything I do up on the net now in one way or the other, sometimes in Google Docs, sometimes in my own private cloud space on my servers. But that way, I really it would be difficult for me to not be able to get at my stuff.
It's funny we hear us talking about this now, and how how far we've come in such a short time.
20 years ago, we were talking about 5 1/4 inch floppy disks.
Yeah, and I mean, it's mind boggling. You stop and think about it, even 10 years. Even the past five of what we've, accomplished so far.
What simple usage used to mean.
The cloud. And I mean, storage space. That we're talking terabytes.
Yep.
Right.
Terabytes. Oh, do you think that's going to be enough? And folks are questioning that because it's like, holy gee.
Yeah. Apple's new data center in North Carolina, they bought 13 million terabytes.
Yeah, and what?
Yeah. Sorry, no, 13 million gigabytes.
There, yeah, 13 million gigabytes.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you walk around now with flash drives. What you can store in them, you know, 40 gig.
On the other hand,
we're gonna need to start using the petabyte prefix next.
That's exactly right. On the other hand, this month I used about 280 megabytes
of
data. So when they start capping.
Ouch.
You know, if they cap me at a couple of gig, maybe okay. But, you know, part of it is we drove to pick up my daughter, and I kept the map thing open.
Yeah.
You know, through the whole trip, and that takes a lot of my data. But if I, you know, if they're going to give me
unlimited,
a couple of hundred meg, well, now it's unlimited. But if, you know, with 4G, if I get a couple of hundred meg, you know, forget that nonsense. We were talking about that, and one of my friends was just ranting about it, and he was saying, you know, if at 4G speeds, if I download enough stuff like movies and whatever, I will use my full month's allotment in 18 minutes.
Yep, I'm at 11 days on this computer, and I've got 3 gigabytes.
Yeah. So it really, you know, and they're all going to do it, and I know they're all going to do it, but I'm telling you right now, if they cap me, I'm changing my carrier. I'm done.
All the carriers are capped, though. It's annoying.
One isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yet.
And you know what? It'd be wise for them not to, because they'd get more folks. They do more, you know, charging less than these others that are charging, you know, more and giving you less.
I love the new T-Mobile commercial where the guy's getting his monthly mugging.
Yeah.
Because we've used that phrase in the past.
Yep.
Do you want to get mugged or do you want to get throttled?
Ooh, good one.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's a real problem, right? It's a real problem for people like Google.
Yeah.
Because Google is telling you put everything in the cloud, live in the cloud, do it all in the cloud, download it from the cloud.
Yep.
Well, that's great, except I can't get to it for, say, 29 days out of the month.
And Netflix and Hulu, who wants to watch videos.
The Netflix, exactly. Netflix, I'm loving that. Yeah.
Well, and that's why Google, that's one of the things about Google that they actually fibered a town, right? They wired an entire town with fiber to the home, and it wasn't Rochester, New York, and I'm blaming my friend Bob for that. He works at Google and somehow did not get Rochester picked, and I'm blaming him personally for that. But, you know, maybe that's a proof of concept for them. If they can put wireless, or if they become a cell carrier, nothing says they can't, and do what they want, break things wide open. And if they feel that they're losing money by not doing it, they'll do it. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hello?
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I was
napping.
We're going to party like it's 1999.
Well, it's 23 minutes after the hour, and apparently we're still sound bites. Who knew? I was just nodding out there for a moment. Asus has posted teaser pics on Facebook for three new devices it will introduce at Computex the week of May 30th, which is this coming Monday. A smartphone tablet mystery device, a revamped EEPC netbook, oh, you bought yours too early, and a tablet that jumps out at you, quote unquote. Teasers never being very clear, right? We're left to guess what these mobile innovations really are. Perhaps most intriguing of the upcoming Asus devices appears to be a tablet and phone combo, perhaps in the spirit of Motorola's dockable Atrix, only Asus' smartphone may dock into the tablet rather than a keyboard. Now, the teaser image on Asus' Facebook page currently just says pad or phone, but other versions of this image posted around the web also have a line beneath it that says, why not both? Asus is no stranger to making combo docking devices with the well-received Asus EEE Pad Transformer dockable tablet already under its belt. I've got one on order. I may never see it. The EEPC netbook looks like it's getting a major upgrade. The next evolution of the EEPC might be slimmer and prettier notebook. It might run Linux. Heck, it could even be a Chromebook. All we know is that it will get an upgrade, something probably necessary for the company to combat flat netbook sales this year. The EEPC being one of the most popular netbooks, though, let's hope Asus will keep the EEPC's low cost and long battery life and its evolved version. Finally, there's this Asus tablet that will just jump out at us. What does that mean? The assumption is, you guessed it, 3D. If that's the case, perhaps Asus has figured out how to eliminate the need for 3D glasses and to keep the cost down, unlike LG's G-Slate tablet, which has nice specs and can capture 3D video, but also a high cost and requires the glasses for viewing. Rule-breaking, innovations beyond expectations, we'll see in just a couple of days. Eager to see what Asus has? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
That's one thing I've got to say. I did see Thor in 3D. And it's been a long time since I've seen 3D. And, wow, what a difference they have done, with the old paper glasses and all that other stuff.
It's about how long. Still need the glasses, but... I've still got a pair of those paper glasses. I don't remember where I got them. I might have gotten them for what was that 3D adventure, the soft core... Vixen Mars Venus.
Mars Needs Women?
No.
I was just saying, you ask him, you know where he's going with it.
No, but that's exactly the Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
Leather Goddesses of Phobos, yeah.
Leather Goddesses of Phobos was a 3D, very, very soft core porn.
Scratch and sniff.
It has scratch and sniff board with it. game for the Apple II, as a matter of fact.
When the first scene, you wake up with a pressure in your bladder.
I never actually played it. I just had the glasses.
No, I bought it. That's one of the first games I ever bought. You wake up with this pressure in your bladder, and depending on whether it was a text adventure, so whether you go into the men's room or the ladies' room, sets your character's gender and influence the whole rest of the game.
Very clever. Very clever. 3D porn, of course, has been around forever. There was a movie back in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, called The Stewardesses. I believe that was the first 3D porn.
Well, then when you got Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it came with your peril-sensitive Jugendu 2000 sunglasses.
Right.
Completely opaque.
Right.
So you couldn't see the peril.
Right.
All right.
And the ravenous Bob Glider Beast of Trawl, who was so blindingly stupid, it thought if you couldn't see it, it couldn't see you.
Yep.
So if you put a towel around your head, you're safe.
Yep. One of the reasons you have a towel.
Thank God for Douglas Adams.
It was towel day just last week. The 26th, maybe? Towelday.org. There it is. It was just a couple of days ago, I think.
2 days ago.
The 26th, yeah.
25th of May.
The 25th, okay. 25th of May was Towel Day. Grab your towel and get out there. They were doing all kinds of things, including reading Vogon love poetry. So there was a bunch of stuff that...
thy freddled grunt runny, thy micturations are to me. World's worst poetry. Now, I want to know who that woman was that was the undisputed worst poetry in the universe. Must have been his, English teacher, right?
Yeah, right. All right, our next caller is Lynn from what may well be Claymore, New York.
Where is it?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Who came in?
Where is Claymore?
Clear in the southwest corner.
How do you spell it?
C-L-Y-M-E-R.
Oh, Claymore.
You ask him that every time he calls.
Well,
no, he does, too.
Well, Dave has...
Dave doesn't know how to spell.
Well, that's very true. That's why I have to ask. I'm not sure quite where you're calling from. What can we do for you?
I have a couple of questions. One of them... Probably...
Hold on here.
No, just let it go, Dave. If I actually spelled what you put... Lynn, did he ask you how to spell your city?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You would not believe...
Wait a minute. I can control him.
C-L-A-M-Y-E.
That's what I thought. No,
E-R. Claymore.
Claymore. Because...
It says Clam-Yed.
I'm trying to just...
Clamier.
Hold on.
Okay, maybe that's an R, but it sure looks like a D with a little...
A D with a hook on it is an R.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Okay,
Hold on a minute. I'm sitting... No. There. Now I've got control. No, you're not getting that. See? They sit there and harass my butt. I've got to sit here and talk low, try to listen to you folks. Will they talk over me? And then they wonder why I can't hear things because they're going on and on and on. Now I will turn them back up.
We should ask Dave how to spell Chautauqua.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Clymer in Chautauqua County.
I just want to get it right because, as you all know, we have an...
George Clymer is a signer of the Declaration of Independence. We should all know that name.
We all know that name.
Yeah, how many times have I told you guys that?
Him and Button Gwinnett. Thank you.
I didn't face the camera.
The main reason I want to get it right is because we have a user map.
And I'm on it.
At Soundbite. Yes, you are. At soundbites.org/.
Then we don't have to worry about it. He's already on there.
And I don't want to screw it up. I've already got people who were in the middle of Lake Ontario and somebody was in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
I didn't put them there.
And I just don't want to screw up Clymer, New York. All right, Lynn, what's your question?
I'm not going to win this one.
You had
a
question?
I have a problem with my Vista machine. Like, who doesn't?
Right.
When I go to boot it, it comes up to the login window, and the pointer freezes. And a few times I was able to plug in a USB mouse and get into it because it would finally recognize that. And it is loading an HID compatible something or other instead of the PS2 mouse.
Well, the HID is the USB driver, human interface device.
No, wait a minute. What was that?
HID is the USB driver. It stands for human interface device, which I guess PS2 means it's non-human interface.
Right.
Well, anyway, who knows? I need the PS2 because this machine is running on a KVM switch.
Right. So what you need to do is go into your device manager.
Been there.
Maybe. Vista doesn't always like things on KVM switch.
No, I understand that. But if it's going to work at all, the thing you want to do is uninstall the PS2 mouse.
Oh, okay. Continue.
Thank you. Uninstall the PS2 mouse.
You want to come and run the board?
And reboot. It will come up. When it comes back up, it'll go, look, new mouse. Do you want to install the driver? You say yes. And hopefully it might be a corrupted driver that you had. And if that's true when it loads a newer version of the driver, tell it look on the internet, whatever, and it'll go out and look and get the newest version of that driver and theoretically solve your problem.
Well, I do have the latest version of that driver, but because I've done that 2 or 3 times. But I don't know. It's very frustrating.
The
KVM switch, I've tried reversing it from machines, and it works fine on the one machine, on the XP machine. But that Vista machine is...
Yeah, one of the problems, and Dave is right about this, when Vista loses a PS2 mouse, it often doesn't look for it again.
Nope.
That's what it's doing.
Yep.
And that's nothing you'll ever fix. Well, move to Windows 7, which does work.
Or a USB mouse, USB KVM.
Or a USB mouse and get a USB KVM. But really, there's no other fix for it, I'm afraid.
That's what I thought. It was going to be easy or impossible.
Vista is the equivalent of Windows ME.
I know, we don't hear much about ME anymore, but Dave still is grinding his teeth over Vista.
Oh, yeah. It's like I say, it was Gates' way of getting back at us because ME was such a flop. So is Vista. He's got to keep it on a roll once in a while.
Anyway, but for my second question.
Yeah.
Back around Christmas, I screwed up. I was going to be real smart, and I was going to map the drives over from my main... my main machine to the basement machine so that I wouldn't have to do backups all the time. Then I was going to synchronize it. Well, I screwed it up and I doubled the files on both machines because I did it wrong somehow. And now I can't find what I need to take off from the main machine to get back down to somewhere around 125 gigs instead of 250.
Oh, so you've got duplicates of every single program.
Ouch. And it shows up. I put a space. I think it was what is it? FileMonger, SpaceMonger, or something. And it shows that it is in files and settings, but it doesn't show up on. I think it's all users.
Yeah.
It's a mess, and I don't know how to straighten it out.
Well, what you probably want is some form of deduplication software.
Never heard of such a thing.
Well, that's kind of what you want. It's software that...
To find duplicates.
Right, that finds duplicates and then gives you the option. And you may have to say yes or no for every file.
Well, some of them try to clean space by deleting duplicate files, but how does it know it's really a duplicate?
Yeah, so, but if he goes after the programs or the folders, or just goes after the programs, he might find the program. Say, like, if you were to go doubles of Word. You'd find Word in two different folders. You could see where and develop a pattern where these duplicates are. All right? Okay. Because, you know, if they're folders within folders.
Yeah,
or, if it happened to duplicate every file in the same folder, you might have a -1 and a -2.
No, they didn't do that because then it would show up in all users and not just the duplicate is somewhere in... Files and settings.
There's invisible folders. Well, there's invisible folders in there. You might have to turn on show invisibles.
Oh.
There's an all users. There's a folder for each specific user, and then there's an invisible administrator folder that only shows up in safe mode.
You don't by any chance use Symantec?
No.
Virus, because they have one in their system. But what you're really looking for is deduplication software.
So just Google that.
And yeah, there are a number of them. Some of them are open source. Some of them you pay for. Some of them are free, although they're not open source. I've never used any, so I can't really give you a go get this one.
I've used a few of them. There's a commercial one called Clean Sweep, which is kind of nice, but then at the end it gives you a list of all the duplicate files, and you have to decide if they're duplicate or not.
Right, and which, you do it one at a time.
Right, and I can do that myself.
Well, why wouldn't I be farther ahead to just try and drag one by one by one over?
You can do that too. But
I mean, that sounds easier than selecting from that.
Well, you just said you don't know where they are.
Well, I take the ones that I do that are on the desktop that I can see. And just drag those over, because those are the ones I want to save, but there's so many.
Yeah.
Well, right.
But it's a way of doing it, and I don't want to have the drive crash before I do something, because I haven't backed up anything with my backup drives, which I wanted to get away from doing, which means also I need to know how to use mapping the drives and synchronizing, just a Reader's Digest view of how to set that up.
Well, it depends on which synchronization software you use.
I haven't got any, so it's just what works best.
Yeah, well,
particularly if it's cheap.
best is subjective. What was it? Spanning Sync, I think, was one that I've heard a lot of good things about, but I don't have any first-hand experience with. No, that synchronizes your calendar with Google Cal.
No, I think Clean Sweep is the one.
Well, now he's on to syncing software. He wants to be able to sync two folders on different computers.
Yeah, that's entirely different.
Yeah, you know, going to Google or download.com and searching for syncing software.
How about Sync Toys? Is that any good?
Have not played with it.
Nope. Haven't played with it.
I know Leo says it's good, but that doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes Leo knows exactly what he's talking about, and other times he just...
Mm-hmm.
Saying what somebody else said.
And it's interesting sometimes if you listen to his Windows show, he says things completely different than on his Mac show because he's got a different audience. He's speaking to his audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But one of the things.
He knows a lot about computers. There's no question about it. But.
At download.com, they have, which is a way to search for software, they have ratings. They have a user rating and they have editor's ratings. And a lot of times that will let you know whether things are good or not. How many other people have downloaded them is also a clue on how good it might be. SyncToy does get fairly high ratings.
Yeah, well, that's... Which do I have to map the drive first and then set up the synchronization or vice versa?
Usually, yeah. You map the drive so that the other computer can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you run the synchronization software and say, make these two folders the same.
Yeah, I started out right. Yeah.
So whatever you delete on one machine will automatically get deleted on the other, and vice versa.
Yeah, that's why I didn't, because the basement machine, I finally went and just formatted the drive and cleaned that one up because it was just going to be too much work doing it any other way.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, I think you've
confused you.
Given me some
enough
ways to go.
Yeah. We do have to run.
Experience on that kind of stuff. Almost zero experience.
Right, we gotta run. Then we gotta run. That
right.
Music
Thank
tells
you,
me
guys.
We gotta go. Thanks. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Before we get
so
to
I said
the...
we could also mention for Lynn that Windows publishes SyncToy, but it's a little old. It's a year and a half old or so. But they also have their Windows Live Sync, which also synchronizes your stuff to the cloud. So when you're not at home, you can get to your files.
Right. In addition to that, before we go back to the phones, I do want to mention we talked a little bit about the Amazon Mac download store. Amazon is giving $5 off any purchase through June 1. Use the code SAVE5MAC. That's all caps, no spaces. Save the number 5 MAC at your checkout.
And they have a free program called Airport Mania that you can download to try it with. To try the service out and then save $5 on the next download.
Yep. All right.
Say Airport Mania, it's an airport simulation that you, as a passenger, you check in, you got your luggage, you get to your connecting flight. I don't know if that sounds fun or not.
Particularly if it happens in real time.
Someone who's traveled a lot.
Yeah, yeah, right. All right, our next caller is Jason from Altoona, PA. Welcome, Jason. What's your question?
I actually had a comment for the gentleman with the KVM switch in Vista.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It seems to me that it would be a simple matter of running the cable from the KVM switch to a USB adapter into the computer.
Ah, so he's running his PS2 mouse and keyboard over a USB adapter. So that way, because USB has an auto detect feature built into it that PS2
exactly
doesn't. That's a nice tip.
That might work, actually. That's a great tip, Lynn. Jason, thank you.
You're welcome. Guys, have a good day.
You too. That actually makes a lot of sense.
And that may be cheaper than switching to a USB switch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There are about 700 different ways to do anything we want to do. The real question is finding the one that works for you. Just a reminder, Steve's been playing with the map at soundbites.com/map. And it's real time, so I just hit enter, and we ought to see an extra Altoona PA there.
5 calls from Altoona, 7 calls from Clymer. So each of the 6 previous times Lynn has called, Dave has gotten the name wrong. And asks him what Clymer is.
You know what? I'll fix your butt.
Yeah.
I'm giving you just the names.
That was him. That was him.
He's going to stop giving the cities.
You're going to get the names.
No, he knows it's more professional to get the names, the city names, too. He knows that. But yeah, mm-hmm. We're trying to give you what we can here at
just remember, payback
series
is a. Mm-hmm.
I know.
Now, this is interesting. There's apparently a Charlotte, New York, down in the western corner of.
Yes.
Which is different than Charlotte.
Shalott.
Shalott.
There is no R in Shalott.
Yeah, Shalott doesn't have an official
real
zip code.
Real Rochesterians
right?
know there's no R in Shalott. Going to Shalott.
Shalott.
No, there's no R. Shalott.
That's because we over-enunciate our R's in every other word.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We're from Rochester.
Rochester.
Rochester. There's only Rochester. It's only 3 syllables in Rochester.
It's just like Chile and Chile.
That's exactly right. Oh, man. Well, I probably shouldn't talk about that because it's a whole other station, and I think they've solved that problem. But there was a Chili Chile confusion at a certain place that I won't name.
Oh.
But it was pretty funny. It only happened a couple of times, and there was a huge brouhaha.
I remember a TV commercial for a car dealership that the ad said they were in Charlotte. And so there was a controversy on the radio where they say, no, it's not Charlotte, it's Charlotte. And then some guy called in and said, well, they're on the other side of the river. It's actually Irondequoit. So if you can't pronounce Charlotte, how are you going to pronounce Arundicoid?
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, we were talking to somebody the other day, and he was saying, we have such weird, a student who's from way out of town. Yep. He has such weird names here, and he was naming off, you know, things like Arundicoid and blah, blah, blah. I said, where do you get to, like, Skinny Atlas? Go ahead, I dare you. Spell that one right the first time.
Yeah. Onondaga.
Onondaga.
Gandagan.
Exactly.
That's all the native words that we Indian usurped names. when the settlers came by.
All right, our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Even I can spell that one. I didn't say a word about you. I did not say a word about you.
I'm good.
Welcome, Gerd. What's your question?
Which one can you spell, Gerd or Victor?
Well, I spelled Gerd trouble the way with I both. Spelled it, and the heck with it, and... In terms of the rest of it, I think I got Victor right.
Very good. Now, question. I have a program called, first of all, I have a Windows XP Professional.
Okay.
He's worked on it. I have a driver reviver program. It picked up a couple of drivers that needed to be replaced. Everything's cool. And all of a sudden, there's one that's called Video Controller, and then brackets is VGA compatible, and it won't download it. How do I go around doing that?
Well, that sounds like it's just a generic VGA video driver.
Okay.
What you probably need to do is find the specific video card in your computer and download that specific driver from that manufacturer.
How do we do that?
Well, first you need to know what video card you have.
Which may be in the manual that came with the computer, or you may have to open it up and look at the labels on the card itself.
Right. You should have gotten, when you got the computer, you should have some documentation that tells you not only what manufacturer it is, but what model it is.
Okay.
You should then be able to go to that manufacturer's website.
Okay.
And download, and make sure you get that specific driver, and it's got to match both the card and the version of Windows you have, in your case, XP Pro.
And sometimes the revision of the card. You know, it may be an ATI 5750 revision 3, which is
different from a revision 2.
Right.
So you've got a little detective work to do. But once you match the two, you'll have a much better experience. You'll have the optimal experience you can have with that machine. Visually, at least, on the web.
And
you may be able to get some head start by looking in your device manager, and it may tell you the make and model of the card. But if it's not specifically listed on your manual, then looking on the card itself is usually the best thing.
Okay.
Make sure, of course, if you're going to pop your computer open, make sure it's turned off.
Yes, thank you. And happy Memorial Day to you guys.
And to you too, Gerd. Yeah.
Thank you much.
Thanks.
Bye.
That is one of the problems that we have fairly regularly, I think, is people calling up, not just here on the show, but you guys as well, for advice and information, and they don't know what's in their machine because wherever they bought it from doesn't give them enough information.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true.
I see it on the other side when I do an RFQ request for quotation or whatever. I get back often what is obviously makes sense to the salesperson, but it's to me just a gobbledygook because it's a series of numbers and letters that make sense
to them
from a manufacturer's point of view. And so they've learned those numbers, but I don't know that an RJ4372 is an 8 gig RAM stick. That's what I need to see.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
You know, I have three RJ4752s. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, that doesn't mean squat to you. Yep.
We had an RFQ a couple of weeks ago where they apparently went to Apple's website and they wanted a Mac Pro, and they printed Apple's website for Mac Pros, including the 16 million combinations of accessories at the bottom. So you could customize it with 27 video cards and 14 monitors. And so I'm thinking, okay, which one do you want?
Or all of them. This is what you asked for.
So do you want a quote with 16 million options on it?
Yeah, right. Well, yes, and we see that too. I get faculty who are asking me all the time, I want this. Okay, what do you want it for?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I want it for X. Well, this doesn't do X. I mean, I understand that you've watched a television commercial or two in your time, But really, what I want to know is, what is it you're going to do with this machine? And then I'll give you a little more than you asked for, because you never ask for everything, because you don't think of everything. But that should make you happy.
Well, like I said, I always tell folks, you know, I don't want to sell them a Cadillac when I can give them a mid-sized car.
But you also don't want to sell them a Mini Cooper when they need a sedan.
I'd rather go in the middle of the road, something that they can expand with and grow with, and not be limited to say, oh, sorry, you know, if you had gone to this, you could have done that. I try to think one step ahead or a little bit above what they need right now, because invariably, you know, they're always going to want, oh, well, I also want to do this. I forgot to tell you. You know, if you already got it specced out and built and everything else, and it's like,
And I forgot to tell you, I want to do World of Warcraft.
Onboard graphics isn't going to cut it. I need, you know, I'm going to, do World of Warcraft. And it's like, ain't happening.
Right, exactly. And by the way, the Mini Cooper is a magnificent piece of machinery.
I got a friend that's got one of those. I keep telling this person, they got to get one of those keys.
I used to have one for my Beetle.
Put the key on it, you know, make it look so when it goes down the street, I get,
I had one for my Beetle, and it actually, because the engine's in the back and that's where you put the key, it actually had a wire that attached to the engine, so if you hooked it up right, when you started the car, the key would start to turn, and as you drove, the key turned. It was great. It actually got stolen.
I remember.
I was very upset about that.
Yeah, a friend of mine had one on the back of his Volkswagen, like you say, but it was one of those rubber sticker ones, you know, it popped it on it.
It didn't turn. This one turned. This one actually had a motor in it.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah, it got stolen, but it was very cool. As I remember, it clamped onto the vents in the back lid there.
I can remember working on, I had a 62 and I had a 64 Volkswagen, both of them. I remember both of them during the winter months, I always had to wire the heaters wide open. Because the wires from the front to the rear would always snap. So I'd just go climb underneath it come winter and wire them straight open. So you had constant heat.
Real thing I liked about the Beetle was I could scrape the back window from the front seat. It worked fine. I could just sit in the car and scrape and scrape and scrape, because it was the inside of the window that I stopped for the first 20 or 30 miles, actually. I did love that car, though. Man, oh, man, what a car that was. That music tells us that you've wasted yet another hour of your life. In total, 2 hours in one weekend you've wasted listening to this show, and we're very, very grateful that you have done so. We want to thank everybody who called in. Please, for those of you we might not have gotten to, please call in earlier. Next week, we'll be here, of course, next week at the same time. We'll also be in Second Life tomorrow night. Here in the East Coast, it's 9 p.m. We'll be in there at 9 p.m. If you're a Linden listener out there in the world somewhere, at 6 p.m. Linden time, we'll be there. And we can't wait. It's the second Second Life. Exactly right, Jack. And we'll be back next week right here with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening.